for the past several weeks, Zelensky has been pulling troops back from certain areas along the front lines, three sectors so far. And the idea is that if the troops are further away from the enemy, if they can't see the enemy, then there's going to be less opportunity to exchange fire and, you know, for the soldiers to get killed. Because Ukrainian soldiers and, of course, people on the pro-Russia side, they're getting killed week in and week out. And this is a strain on Ukraine. It's been going on for 5 years. So, you know, one of his promises is to bring that down. And that's what he's trying to do. But how do you get the other side to believe that they really need to hold to the terms of such an agreement if you're a superpower, a former superpower like Russia? If you've got another superpower backing your adversary, right, that's one thing. But if that superpower's, you know, resolve suddenly disappears, what are you left with? For those of us who watch Ukraine day in, day out, we knew that something was up starting in May when Giuliani started sending these weird tweets about Zelensky surrounding himself with people who are enemies of Donald Trump. And, you know, that's the kind of language that people reserve for their adversaries, not for their allies. If you have something to say to a partner, to an ally, then you say that behind closed doors. You certainly don't tweet about it and say that you're surrounding your presidency with enemies of our president. That's almost like a hostile overaction.
Right.
So that rung alarm bells, really, for those of us who were in Kyiv at the time, who were seeing these tweets, and that's when we started just wondering what the heck is going on.
Eight Ukrainian soldiers died in the month of August because they didn't have proper weapons. 50 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and wounded in the month of September. There were harms and there were fouls. There are dead people. That there is a shooting war going on in Ukraine. The United States has undertaken to help Ukraine. Congress voted massively to help Ukraine. Soldiers died while waiting for weapons that President Trump delayed.
GOP Pictures presents...
Bing, bing, bong, bing.
Graham with the Wind, starring Lindsey Graham. An epic tale about a man who took a stand.
If you could show me that, you know, Trump actually was engaging in a quid pro quo outside the phone call, that would be very disturbing.
And then change that stand with the wind.
I'm not going to read these transcripts.
See the Constitution go up in flames with John Bolton.
Frankly, Pelosi.
I don't give a damn.
And Devin Nunes.
I don't know nothing about
quid pro quo.
Filmed in stunning spineless scope.
I've written the whole process off. I'm written him off. I think this is a bunch of BS.
Graham with the Wind.
And God is my witness. I'll never
trust Lindsey Graham
again.
On the eve of the public impeachment hearings, on the eve of these historic public impeachment hearings.
Impeachment hearing eve.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With Republicans screaming and Democrats dreaming, impeachment is near. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the impeachiest season of all. Getting dirt from the Ukraine to help your next campaign will be your downfall. It's the impeachiest season. season of all. There'll be transcripts for reading, the president's tweeting that this whole thing is a hoax.
Hoax.
There'll be Nunes and Jordan ignoring extortion, executive privilege and vote. It's the most wonderful time, yes, the most wonderful time for the most obvious crime you'll ever hear.
Lyshenko was a source for Fusion GPS's operation to dirty up the Trump campaign, including the compilation of the Steele dossier.
President Zelensky didn't announce he was going to investigate Burisma or the Bidens. He didn't do a press conference and say, I'm going to investigate the Bidens, we're going to investigate Burisma. President Zelensky doesn't announce it before the aid is released on the 11th.
Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out.
You asked the witness a question. The witness
I'll withdraw the question. What did President Zelensky actually do to get the aid? The answer is nothing. He did nothing. He didn't open any investigations.
We're not talking any country. We're talking Ukraine. Ernst & Young said one of the three most corrupt countries on the planet. President Trump said, let's just see. Let's just see if he's legit. So for 55 days, we checked him out.
This irregular channel of diplomacy, it's not as outlandish as it could be. Is that correct?
Nunes's opening statement was like a conspiracy potpourri. You know, CrowdStrike and Chalupa and Fusion GPS. I don't even understand how a swing voter watching that could even understand or translate what he was saying, unless they were kind of steeped in this, Sean Hannity-esque, conspiracy tale narrative that they've been spinning. And so I think that set the tone.
People have been making fun of the didn't get away with it argument. Rightly so. You know, there's this Sideshow Bob in jail.
Convicted of a crime I didn't even commit. Attempted murder. Now, honestly, what is that? Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry? Do they?
Guess in some ways it's the best. It is kind of the best argument they have, because at least it doesn't require them to say it's fine for if he had gotten away with it, and yeah, also to deny the facts that are produced.
I think it's the second best argument, right? Stefanik was made that in the post-game press conference. She said there was no investigation in the end into Burisma. They got their aid. They didn't get their aid under Obama. And that's that. The problem with that argument for me is that Zelensky was booked on CNN, right? And they were 2 days away from getting away with it, from winning the chemistry Nobel Prize award, right? So there's some holes in that.
And the only reason that the money was released, as far as we can tell, is that the whole whistleblower complaint started to
right.
run long.
Two days beforehand, right? The whistleblower complaint was on the 9th, and then on the 11th they released the aid. So I think there's some holes there. The Haley argument over the weekend, which was, this is the death penalty. These guys have been trying to do this for three years. Yeah, right. Is this a death penalty type crime?
Yeah.
I think that's their best argument. I disagree with it also because it was trying to impact the next election, which is why I think it's a death penalty crime. But I think that's the most compelling.
Listening to all the evidence, everything I've heard and read in this investigation, it seems to me that the president of the United States either committed extortion and bribery of a foreign official or attempted extortion and bribery of a foreign official. When President Trump got President Zelensky on the phone on July 25th, he was talking to a desperate man, wasn't he? President Zelensky was desperate to protect his country and make sure that he had foreign assistance from the United States. Is that right?
President Zelensky is very interested in U.S. support, both assistance and political support.
Yes, what would have happened if the aid had gotten cut off, Ambassador? What would have happened to President Zelensky's career? And what would have happened to the Ukraine?
If the assistance had been cut off, he would have been much weaker in his negotiations with the Russians. He would have been much weaker on the battlefield.
The Russians may have taken it as an invitation to actually take military action against Ukraine. Is that right?
The Russians always look for vulnerabilities, and they know that the United States has supported Ukraine. If the Russians determine or suspect that that support is lessened or not there, they will likely take advantage.
They could have pounced.
They could have taken advantage.
So he had a desperate man on the phone, and he asked a desperate man for a favor. And based on your testimony, it sounds like, begrudgingly, President Zelensky may have actually agreed to do that favor and investigate the Bidens and Burisma. Is that right?
President Zelensky does say in the transcript that he will pursue the investigations.
So we know that President Trump asked for a favor to help his political career, and it appears as though the president of the Ukraine agreed to that favor. Do we know why it didn't actually happen? Do we know why there was no announcement in front of CNN or to CNN about an investigation?
Mr. Castro, as we've determined, as we've discussed here, on September 11th, just before any CNN discussion or interview, the hold was released. The hold on the security assistance was released.
But we don't. So the hold was released. Is it possible that the White House released that hold because they knew that a whistleblower had basically turned this in?
I don't know, sir.
Do you think that's possible?
I'm not in a position to judge.
So we have a president who the other side has claimed or has defended the president, saying that the aid went through, that there was never any investigation. But the president attempted to get those things done. And it looks like there was an initial agreement by the president of the Ukraine to actually do those things. So, ambassadors, is attempted murder a crime? Is attempted murder a crime?
Attempted murder is a crime.
Is attempted robbery a crime?
Neither of us is a lawyer, but I
think anybody in this room could answer that question.
I think that's right. I'll go out on a limb and say, yes, it is.
Is attempted extortion and bribery a crime?
I don't know, sir.
It may not be tomorrow, but it'll be sometime during this process, public process, that there will be a stunt, that Republicans are going to pull a stunt. They want to delegitimize these hearings. They do not want to act as though the hearings are legitimate, fair, reasonable, or purposeful. And one of the ways they may do that is to take a page out of all people, Abby Hoffman, the Chicago 7 trial, and do something to make a mockery of the proceedings.
Well, are you asking if I had those thoughts? Or if I wrote that I had those thoughts, because there's a difference. I don't know. I've never been on trial for my thoughts before. The difficult thing about defending a conspiracy charge is that all the government has to do is prove one act, and then they connect everybody to it.
Last Friday, a member of my staff told me of events that occurred on July 26th. While Ambassador Volker and I visited the front, this member of my staff accompanied Ambassador Sondland. Ambassador Sondland met with Mr. Yermak. Following that meeting, in the presence of my staff, at a restaurant, Ambassador Sondland called President Trump and told him of his meetings in Kyiv. The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for. At the time I gave my deposition on October 22nd, I was not aware of this information. I am including it here for completeness. As the committee knows, I reported this information through counsel to the State Department's legal advisor, as well as to counsel for both the majority and the minority of this committee. It is my understanding that the committee is following up on this matter.
And Ambassador McFaul, as we listened to that, it was noticed that there are two more depositions with brand new witnesses that will be heard from on Friday. Your thoughts on the impact of that?
Well, I want to say two things about it. First, the substance is a bombshell. And if Ambassador Sondland wants to come and testify to say it's not true, we can do that. But it stands as fact now. as Ambassador Taylor said it. But I want to underscore how completely extraordinary it is for any ambassador to call the president of the United States. To do so on an open cell phone line is another thing. Let's put that aside for now. But this whole, you know, this alibi that President Trump, he barely knows who this guy is. I don't know who he is. And yet he is calling him from Kiev to report on what President Trump obviously wants to know about his quid pro quo. And I think that really undermines this argument that there is no direct connectivity with the president. And the second one, if I can get it in, Tim Morrison, the other part of this I just want to underscore, he's the senior director for Russia, Europe, Ukraine. He's the president's most senior advisor at the White House. I had a job like that working for Obama. With respect to Russia. And when I spoke to any U.S. government official, everybody knew that I was speaking on behalf of the president. I was the person that knew his thoughts and views on Russia, and in this case, on Ukraine. So this notion that it's all hearsay and phone talk, no. You have two people very close to the president, Ambassador Sondland calling him on his cell phone from a Kiev restaurant, which I've never heard of before, and Tim Morrison corroborating the evidence and the witness, the things that Ambassador Taylor testified today.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
We've got 2019 new music from Catskill's Ross Goldstein, just out, called Obsidian Cat 2 on the radio WGXC. Thank you.
in the memory bank, everything is free. Afternoon siesta under a shady tree.
That was Upstate Blues by Ross Goldstein, Catskill-based composer. Here's Catskill's Ross Goldstein with the song Chessie from his 2017 release Inverted Jenny.
Thank you.
You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Athens, Germantown, Chatham, Coxsackie, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Hi, everybody. This is Brad with the United Way of Columbia and Greene counties. It's the mission of our local United Way to help children and youth succeed, assist our senior community, build strong neighborhoods, and aid families who are facing challenges like substance abuse, autism, or even literacy. We do these things by raising money and supporting programs that are run by other local nonprofits such as the Salvation Army, Sprouts, Kite's Nest, and many more. Through the work of the employee giving campaigns, private donations, and our signature fundraisers, the UWCG is the only local nonprofit that raises money to help other local nonprofits. Be a part of the tapestry that is Columbia and Greene counties. Join your United Way.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cindy Miller and Matt Lenung of Albany, New York.
Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM. Listener-supported radio.
Elizabeth Warren won't admit it, but the primary system is racist. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. As the United States becomes increasingly diverse, and the Democratic Party even more so, the presidential nomination process remains heavily weighted by two states that are among the whitest in the nation, Iowa and New Hampshire. When we asked about this racial disparity at a presidential candidate forum that the Democracy Now! NewsHour co-hosted in South Carolina last week, Democratic candidate Elizabeth Warren bristled, replying,
"I'm just a player in the game."
Senator Warren and the other candidates need to answer why the primary process favors these two small, rural, aging, and almost entirely white states. And they need to explain how this so-called game that weeds out candidates so early in the process is anything other than a glaring example of systemic racism. The forum was held at South Carolina State University, an HBCU, historically black college or university in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Here's the question and answer in full.
Senator Warren, just 30 seconds left. But speaking about racial injustice, do you think the order of the primary state should change? You have Iowa and New Hampshire.
Let me just, before you finish, are you actually going to ask me to sit here and criticize Iowa and New Hampshire?
No, I'm asking about the order.
No, that is what Iowa and New Hampshire are all about.
But let me just ask, they're two of the whitest states in the country. And then we moved to South Carolina with a very significant population of people of color. And it means the candidates spend so much of their time catering to those first two states. Overall, do you think that should change?
Look, I'm just a player in the game on this one. And I am delighted to be in South Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You, Senator.
Senator Warren's irritated reaction to the question betrays the Democratic Party's rigid orthodoxy on first-in-the-nation status for both the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary. In 1972, Iowa Democrats moved the caucus up to January 24th to give themselves extra time to process the results from all the precincts. That early date made the Iowa caucuses the nation's first indicator of each candidate's standing, and thus attracted extraordinary media attention. Sensing they were onto something, the Iowa Democratic and Republican parties agreed to always hold their caucuses early and on the same day to maximize national press coverage. New Hampshire then managed to cement its hold as the first primary state immediately following the Iowa caucuses. This has been the status quo since the 1970s, but nothing says it has to stay that way. MSNBC played our exchange with Warren for Democratic presidential hopeful Julian Castro, who responded,
"I actually believe that that we do need to change the order of the states, because I don't believe that that we're the same country we were in 1972. That's when Iowa first held its caucus first. And by the time we have the next presidential election in 2024, it'll have been more than 50 years since 1972. Our country has changed a lot in those 50 years. The Democratic Party has changed a lot. What I really appreciate about Iowans and the folks in New Hampshire is that they take this process very seriously. Mm-hmm. They vet the candidates. They show up at town halls. They give people a good hearing. At the same time, demographically, it's not reflective of the United States as a whole, certainly not reflective of the Democratic Party, and I believe that other states should have their chance. So yes, of course, we need to find other states. And that didn't mean that Iowa and New Hampshire can't still play an important role.
Right.
But I don't believe that forever we should be married to Iowa and New Hampshire going first.
There are already four majority-minority states, California, Hawaii, New Mexico, and Texas, along with the District of Columbia. Holding caucuses or primaries in these states first would likely have a dramatic effect on the outcome. The lead-up to both Iowa and New Hampshire now are so long, with candidates in some cases spending more than a year making frequent, extended campaign swings through both states. Imagine if they were spending that much time in more diverse states like South Carolina. Elizabeth Warren, to her credit, did travel to Orangeburg to participate in this first-ever presidential candidate forum on environmental justice. The forum was co-moderated by Mustafa Santiago Ali, former Environmental Protection Agency official, now at the National Wildlife Federation. At the top of the forum, Mustafa defined environmental justice.
Environmental justice is the disproportionate impacts that continue to happen in our communities. The things that no one else wants, they place them in communities of color, low-income communities, and indigenous lands. They become the sacrifice zones for coal-fired power plants, for certified animal feeding operations, for waste treatment facilities, for unhealthy housing, where we find lead and so many other impacts that are happening. So, in essence, the environmental injustices that continue to happen are happening to people of color and low-income communities.
The concerns of the first states in the presidential nomination process disproportionately impact the agenda for the entire race. Democracy is about representation. The primary and caucus system needs to be reformed now. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Show me the feeling. Ah, you got me wrong. If you don't belong, live in the trouble. Don't hesitate. Time heals the pain. You ain't the problem. I live the lie. Love is the crime. It's you I believe in. No need to blame myself. No need to die. I'm only human. I'm done. You got to put me on. I know when you come along. Don't hesitate. You are the one, do all the talking. You got me wrong, I caught you calling, I hear you calling. Don't hesitate. Time heals the pain. You ain't the problem. I live the dream, I hope to be who I believe in. I used to hate myself. You got the key, break out the prison. Oh, I hope.
hope to never see time passing. Don't hesitate. Time heals the pain. You ain't the problem.
Music from Michael Kiwanuka from the album Kiwanuka. That is You Ain't the Problem on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
That was 2019 new music from Oval. The song was called Paragram from the 2019 album Explosio.
I was born March 4th, 1903, near Union City, Kentucky, in Madison County. My parents had 5 children in 9 years, 3 boys and 2 girls. In 1910, we moved from Union City to Brookstown, which is near Red House. I started in a one-room school that was heated by a large coal heater in the middle of the room, with double desks, 2 or 3 sitting together in the seat. It had a large recitation bench up in front where we sat when having class. All 8 grades were taught in this room with just 1 teacher. Most of the time, the teacher made the fires, swept the floors, and straightened up the room before any of the children arrived. Some of the girls and boys in the upper grades would help with the ones in the lower grades. After graduating in 1921, I taught a 3-month spring school at Brookstown. In a spring school, the parents paid the teacher $3 a month for each pupil. Certificate. I taught the first 4 grades at Red House School for 2 years, then taught 1 year in high school. That year, my youngest brother and sister went to school with me, and they graduated that year. In the fall of 1927, I went to Benham in Harlan County. There were 130 children in the first grade, so the class was divided with 2 teachers. They were building a new school building. And as we didn't have enough room, one teacher taught half of them from 8 to 12, and I taught the other 65 from 12:30 to 4. In January 1928, I got married. Out that year, then quit teaching to raise our family. In 1933, we moved from Harlan County to Stanford in Lincoln County. We have 1 son and 4 daughters. In 1956, I returned to teaching as a substitute. Then in 58, I taught the first 4 grades in a 2-room school in Roland. In 1959, I came back to Union City to teach in the same building that my mother had begun her teaching career many years ago. And in the spring of 60, they gave me the principal's job. City. And in 1962, the school was consolidated with the Red House School to move to the new Daniel Boone School here in Madison County. I went to summer school, then started teaching the second grade. It was the first school that I had ever had just 1 grade, with new equipment and many conveniences. In 63, I taught 12 days and got sick, so I took a year's leave of absence. After resting and getting to feel better, I decided to come back to Eastern the second term and hope to get my degree in August. I feel that we have a good deal in common. As you went to rural school and loved living on a farm in your childhood days. Also, I love boys and girls, If it wasn't for the love of being with boys and girls, trying to teach them to be good citizens, I wouldn't be going to school. For at my age, it is very hard to concentrate and learn with the younger generation being so alert.
Was Rachel Grimes with Red House School from the 2019 album The Way Forth.
Thank you.
That was Panda Bear from the Animal Collective with Nod to the Folks, a 2019 new track on the radio at WGXC from the EP A Day with the Homies.